with gray streaks from the ash. His retreat was taking him down the gently sloping beach toward the edge of the lake. Doc, his mouth set in a grim line of deadly intent, pursued him. He began to use his sword stick with increasing aggression, thrusting and making the Viking struggle to parry the blows.
Lunge, riposte, lunge, and riposte.
Both men were knee-deep in the water.
Now.
It was almost as if the old man heard his whispered words. With an easy cut of the wrist, he caught Odo's flailing blade on his, turning it away. Half-turning so that his shoulder dropped, Doc swung his rapier up and to the right, ripping the Norseman's steel from his hand. Ryan holstered his pistol. Odo Crookback stood and waited for his end, arms spread.
Strike, Outlander. Hard and clean.
Doc hesitated, unwilling to kill an unarmed man. Suddenly, Odo reached down to a hidden blade in his boot and swung it upward. Doc thrust his left leg forward, right arm and wrist extended. The point entered the body of the Viking, a hand span above his belt, and a couple of inches to the left of his breastbone. Ah! It slid between the guarding ribs, slicing through the outer muscles of the heart, cutting open the lungs. The power of the blow brought Doc up close against the doomed man, the point of his weapon standing out under the shoulder blade by a good 6 inches of blood-slick steel. Odo lurched away, ripping himself clear of the rapier. His fists punched at the sky. He toppled sideways, falling in a flurry of foam, landing face down.
Looks like Mildred stays alive, Baron.
Jorund Thoroldsen looked at him, his face betraying no emotion whatsoever.
The gods will it so. You must be hungered. We shall feed you. Come.
Ryan and his companions were given a hut that had belonged to a family that had died recently. Harold Verilisian, who had been the brewer of ale in the Vale of Markland, his wife and both sons, had fallen sick of a wasting illness after they'd returned from an expedition to fetch mountain spring water some miles along the coast. The young woman who brought food to the Outlanders told them about it in whispers, looking over her shoulder to make sure nobody overheard her.
Great buboes grew in their armpits and between their legs. Blisters sprang up around their cracked lips. The nails dropped from their finger ends, and their teeth fell from their bleeding gums.
Mildred glanced across at Ryan, as though she were about to say something, but she chose to keep her own counsel.
I've been in Markland all my life. That's stupid. Everyone in the Steading has been here all their lives. Nobody ever leaves, and hardly anyone ever comes.
As the woman spoke, she was fingering the neck of her dress, scratching at a small red spot at the side of her throat. When she pulled down the woven material, the girl revealed the top of an iron collar, locked in place.
What's that? Some kind of punishment?
The young woman looked puzzled.
My thrall ring? Is that what you mean, Outlander?
Yeah, the iron collar.
All thralls wear it.
What's a thrall?
She turned to Jack, then glanced hastily away, making a strange sign with her fingers, almost as if she were averting some sort of evil.
Thrall, my dear young man, is simply an old word for slave. The Vikings built their social order upon thralls.
You're a slave? There aren't slaves anymore.
Tell that to barons like Teague, and plenty more beside him. Plenty of frontier plague pits have folks no better than slaves.
How many of you are thralls, child?
The girl repeated the same sign with her fingers, averting her eyes again.
Some.
Who decides?
What?
Who's a slave, thrall, and who isn't? Who makes the rules?
Outlanders are double stooped. A thrall is thrall-born. A freeman is free-born. How could it be any other way?
Ryan nodded.
Yeah, I see that was sort of stupid, thanks. And thanks for bringing us the meal. It looks good.
Eat in fine heart, and may Freya bless your dining.
The girl curtsied and left the hut, taking care not to look at either Jack or Mildred.
These people are scared shitless by you, Mildred.
Good.
She looked triple stooped to me.
Jack sat himself at the dusty table and pulled a wooden bowl in front of him. Ryan joined the boy.
You're right, Jack. But they look at Mildred a lot different than they look at you. She terrifies them because I guess they've never seen anyone black before. But it's almost like the opposite with you. Your hair is pure white, and I guess that sort of impresses them.
The food was excellent. Ryan thought the meat was rabbit, but Christy assured him it was hare, roasted over a fire with sprigs of thyme pushed beneath the skin to give it a marvelous tangy flavor. It was served with a sauce of sugared cranberries. There was also a shoulder of mutton cooked with leeks, mushrooms, and sweet potatoes. A dark cauldron of iron held a simmering stew of herrings and some other unidentifiable fish in a vegetable stock. A wooden platter was piled high with sun-ripened apples, sweet and delicious and crisp to the teeth. There was a tankard of foaming ale and beakers made from horns and some bubbling fresh milk. Two loaves of flatbread with salted butter completed the repast.
That ale smells wonderful.
Run a radiation counter over it before you touch it.
How's that, Mildred?
You heard that slave girl.
Yeah, of course. The guy who lived in this hut and all his family died. He was the brewer.
And the symptoms sounded a lot like radiation poisoning of some kind. If I had to make a guess, I'd say that something's happened up the coast.
Hotspot?
Jack helped himself to a generous ladling of the fish stew, slapping some on the table in his eagerness.
You mean somewhere that there's a higher than usual leakage count? Yeah, could be. But it has to be something kind of recent, or this whole village would have been snuffed out by now.
How about the rest of the food? If it's in the water, then maybe the fish could have absorbed some of it.
Mildred nodded.
But it's hardly likely a few small meals can hurt. You'd need repeated low dosages over months for any significant health risk.
If you'll forgive me, I don't think I'll sample that beer, even so. But the hare can surely tempt me.
After some hesitation, they all sat around the table and tucked into the meal. Within 20 minutes, almost everything was gone. No one touched the ale. Jorund Toraldsen, with half a dozen of the senior men of the Ville, appeared shortly after the companions had finished eating.
You are relishing the food? Oh, I see that you have. Yet our best ale is not to your liking?
Ryan stood and faced the Baron.
We come from a Ville where alcohol is forbidden by our religion. But the milk was good and the food was marvelous. Thanks for it.
Now we should talk of the future, Ryan Cawdor. Of you and your friends. And the women.
Talk away, Baron.
The women can leave.
How's that?
Now, Markland has its rules, its laws that go back to the beginning of history. You are all here, and Outlanders must pay our price of living here. We have agreed to let the Black live, have we not?
Ryan rubbed his chin.
That's one way of looking at it, Baron. Of course, another way would be to say that our man beat your man. Left him chilled, face down in the water.
Sooth. We should not fall to bickering over this. The women must leave this hut to live with the other unmarried women in their long house at the center of Markland. There they can help the other women at their duties.
Like sewing and cooking? That kind of stuff, Baron?
If you don't guard your tongue, you flame-haired slut, then you'll find yourself at the stone paying the blood price for—
Jorund, take care of what you say to them.
The huge Viking turned his head slowly, like some great wounded beast, seeing the speaker. Jorund's pale eyes were veiled with his own anger, and Ryan noticed specks of white froth at the corners of his lips. The eruption of blinding anger was an impressive and frightening sight.
Eagle?
Yes, Carl?
The words I heard through the Berserker's mist came from you.
But I—
I know, friend. My ears heard the words I was uttering, but my mouth could do naught to check them.
Ryan was, as ever, at Christie's elbow. He leaned toward her, lips scarcely moving, his breath not stirring a tendril of her long scarlet hair.
Better do it, sweetheart.
How long?
A day, two at most. There's some double bad things in this Ville.
The Baron of Markland caught their whispered conversation, and he turned to Ryan.
My anger took me from myself for a moment. I fear I came near to... What do you say?
Christy and Mildred will do what you say. They'll go and live in the house with the other women of your Ville. But they are not and never will be your women, or anyone else's women. They are our companions, free and equal in every way.
I heard that.
Jorund Toraldsen stroked his long blonde mustache and looked down for a moment at his feet while he considered Ryan's words.
You will not leave Markland until we say you may, nor the women. But it shall be as you say. Now they can go with the thrall. She can show them where they will live. You stay here.
The tests?
Tests?
Yoren smiled, what looked to be a genuine, happy smile.
Aye. We have seen how your oldest man can butcher one of our best swords. We wait eagerly to see how you three fare as warriors.
What are these tests?
Halfway between nothing and a small thing, Outlander. Since you are to be with us, we must know your mettle.
He waved a dismissive hand.
Do not worry.
I don't. But it would help some to know what kind of things you're going to throw at us.
Trials for a warrior.
That was all he'd say. The Norseman left the hut. Almost immediately, the girl with the iron slave collar came and led Christie and Mildred away, leaving the men behind to wonder what the next dawning would bring.
Arise, gentlemen.
Doc stood silhouetted in the doorway of the hut.
There is a gray mist upon the sea's face, and there is a gray dawn breaking.
Ryan stretched like a big cat, his muscles almost cracking as he extended his arms and legs. The mattress beneath him, which was filled with sweet-smelling summer grass, rustled. The air was cool, and he breathed in deeply, aware of how much he'd missed having Christie to warm his back. He'd slept fully dressed, only kicking off the steel-toed combat boots. His rifle rested at his side, and his 6-hour was